They were high school sweethearts that got married and had two kids. It's the Brunettes. From a new location, they tweet all day, but that's okay. They're the Brunettes. She is a journalist. He is a wonk.
Wonk, wonk, wonk.
They talk about the news or whatever they want. In the fight for justice, they're on your side. You can't deny it's the Brunettes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
I think I might be a little hot on this mic. Are we going? Is that better?
More than a little.
Okay.
I'll turn you down a little bit.
Thank you. Maybe that might be too much, though.
Okay, there you go.
There we go. Sorry, we usually sort this out in the booth, but not today.
They like the behind the scenes.
They do.
It's like when, you know, when sometimes you're listening to music track.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, there's like 3 or 4 seconds of the producer.
Yeah.
And then it plays.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's
man.
So cool. That's in the Jenny Lewis song, Acid on My Tongue. And also at the end of Every Time the Sun Comes Up.
That shit sucks, by the way.
That song?
That thing where they decide to put producer shit in there. Yeah. I don't need any of that.
I don't need any.
I'm not. What are we doing?
This is not VH1 Behind the Music.
What are we doing? I don't get it. Every time I want to listen to the song, I have to listen to the producer say some bullshit.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
It sucks.
One time, if you like you said, like a behind the scenes, okay, sure.
Yeah.
But every time it's on my shuffle, I gotta hear, all right, let's go.
Okay.
And then, you know, some depressing song also kind of, you know, takes the fucking wind out of the sails.
Yeah.
I'm trying to listen to some suicidal ass music. Yeah. And when you're like, all right, take five, let's go. That's not really.
Yeah. The studio noise is not helping in that situation. I, you know what a good make yourself emotional song is? The Cause of Labor is the Hope of the World.
Yeah. It's a good one.
You should play it. But people will love it. There's no
so
words.
We should play it silently, and then we can just finish the podcast, because the podcast will be over at that point.
Yeah, it's so long. It's so damn good. Anyway.
That one actually goes very good with the movie that it was written as a soundtrack for.
Yeah, I
if
saw
you can
that.
Get that video. It's on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, I
the
was
Cause
watching it.
The Cause of Labor is the Hope of the World, where he's got it over a bunch of minor.
Yeah, and there's a huge union parade.
There's a parade. And then it ends in, and I'm not, I think he's cutting together different things. So that's maybe not super literal, but the ending of all this parade and joy and all these people walking is they go into this very beautiful church.
Yeah.
And they're putting a fellow miner to their grave.
Yeah.
Died presumably in a mining accident.
Yeah.
And
get
you going.
Look at what they took from us. Honestly, that kind of union power.
All right. I think we're going to spend most of the episode on pronatalism, antinatalism, things of that nature. I do have one very brief audio that I guess I'll play. All right. And this, I don't know. This just tickled me when I came across it. It's not very profound or interesting, but here we go. We got a man on the street guy. There's this guy that does, you know, there's like a few YouTubers and TikTokers. That's their bit. That one that did... What was it? This Shit Rules, or you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The guy who also maybe did some things with women he shouldn't have done.
Oh, no.
Whatever.
One of those situations.
You remember he did like the Jan 6 stuff? We watched his documentary.
Oh, yeah. He's really funny, but apparently he's a sex pest. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunate.
Very talented, though.
Very talented documentarian. You got to separate the artist, you know,
this
from the
shit
art.
Rules documentary. Is that what it was called? Fucking hell, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyway, similar kind of guy. Not as talented, but, you know.
I want to also say alleged sex pest. It's not like he was convicted in a court of law.
Whatever. He's out there again. I saw him on a podcast interview. He's moved on. So
good. Yeah.
Here we go.
Okay.
Billionaires should exist. Billionaires should exist.
Well, yeah, because they help fund things that we need.
No, I'm sorry. That's wrong.
No?
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
he just walks away. The reason we've had some delays is that Liz has been ill.
I got the flu.
I'll try to hop on the mute button as I can.
Thank you.
But I had an interview with Jared of, not of Subway fame, but of my legal representation fame, Stephen Crowder fame, Bill Edmondson of Rawls' Socialist fame.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I was on the Money with Katie podcast. I put that on there too.
I have thought about, and the listeners can tell me if they're interested, having Ross Douthat on again.
Was he on before?
I think so.
All right.
Talk about his new book, which is like arguing rationally that people should believe in God.
Cat has arrived.
Hi, Mr. White, you dumbass. Come on, baby.
I don't think he's ever hopped on here while we've been podcasting.
He's such a confused. What are you doing?
I saw a video of a cat who had his bed in his mouth. It was a small bed.
Yeah.
And he jumped from a very high sort of bookcase to a table. And he jumped with the bed in his mouth, and he managed to get the bed down and land in it.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
That was pretty impressive.
And then I thought to myself, Mr. White will never do that.
No.
You got to shove him off the table. That's the game here.
But he's going.
All right. So we have, bring him on. How about I should read the book? And
well, that's what I was thinking.
And then we'll have a old style new atheism debate or something.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, that's the fallacy of the missing middle or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can become real Islamophobic like all the new atheists.
Yeah. I can become a neuroscientist or something.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a guy out there who's doing that. He's hustling in the atheism game these days.
Yeah.
He's like some kind of Oxford guy. He's got a mustache. I don't know his deal, but he seems to be all over the place. He was the one that Jordan Peterson, you know, he managed to goad Jordan Peterson into taking the position that dragons are real.
Yeah.
Or he was somehow moderating the debate between Peterson and Dawkins that devolved into the question of whether dragons are real. And he pops in as moderator. It's like, we just, you know, so whatever.
Is just Jordan Peterson, surely he goes for it in like a meaningless sense. Like they're real in our hearts or something like that. Or,
oh yeah, no, it's fucking.
Or is he just
it's
like.
It's the usual tiresome bullshit where it's all semantics and whatever. And he's just very impressed with the profundity of his language. Here it is. Shit. Well, here we go.
Analogize the dragon fight to fighting Satan.
What dragons have
you
overcome in your life?
I'm not interested in dragons. I'm interested in reality.
Okay, so I read a book a while back that described the biological reality of the dragon. Say, well, there's no such thing as a dragon. It's like, okay, is there such a thing as a predator?
Of course.
Well, that's a meta category. What's the category of predator? Bear, eagle, if you're a primate. Fire? Is fire a predator? No. Well, no. It's complicated because a fire kills you. So is there a worse predator than serpentine, flying, fire-breathing reptile? Is that not the imagistic equivalent of predator? So in what way, if predator is real, in what way isn't dragon real?
I don't know why you say dragon. I mean, we have lions, we have tigers, we have saber-tooths.
Right, but why not abstract?
So a dragon is a pictorial representation of the abstracted concept of a predator.
Yes.
As you say, we already have the term predator. And so it might be useful in art, in narrative, when you say the biology of a dragon. You must understand how that can be misleading.
I don't think the category of dragon is any less valid than the category of lion.
Any less biological?
Well, it depends on your level of analysis.
You would say that lions are an instantiation of this bracket term of predator.
I would also say...
Would you therefore say that a lion is an instantiation of the bracket term of dragon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because we're not only fact-oriented creatures, right? It actually matters to us whether we get eaten.
Just
God's dumbest man, dude.
But it's like, it's perfect new atheist stuff because you just find the dumbest fucking. But Jordan Peterson somehow is a big guy despite being a moron.
Yeah.
And so it's perfect fodder. And he does run circles around him, this like 20-year-old.
Yeah.
You know? But like, how hard is it? Fucking Jay Kang ran circles around Jordan Peterson as well.
Jay Kang's pretty smart.
Well,
yeah.
I shouldn't say like if Jay Kang did it. I would expect Jay Kang to do it. I would, you know, but you know what I mean? Like,
it's like if you sit Jordan Peterson down and remain calm and don't react to the sort of crazy shit he's saying and just ask him questions, it becomes increasingly clear it's absurd.
If you can get in the... But so few people can do debater shit.
Yeah.
That's the real story. J. Kang was a debater.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're so... One of the things, I guess, that's beneficial about having done debate is it fully desensitizes you to the practice of going back and forth.
Yeah.
And you forget that regular people, when they start arguing, their heartbeat starts going, they start getting stress and anxiety, and they maybe start getting a little angry, and like all of those things kind of affect their performance. But when you've had to do it 200 times in a high school, fucking empty high school room on Saturday morning, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And you just sit there and you're like, okay, and you're just processing. Okay, here's the problem. Here's the problem. All right, I'm going to hit him, you know, and he won't have anything to do. And then you just do it.
Yeah.
You just become like a psycho, like someone who's done like 25 contract killings, you know, like, and then they like, if I had to kill someone, I'd be a nervous wreck. But that guy is just like, whatever, boom, you know, he's nothing to him.
I bet you could do it, though, if you decided to go Luigi. Do you think you could pull off a Luigi type thing?
It's interesting. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, you can look at what he did and you could just not make the mistakes, right?
Yeah.
Like, he had it going. He had some face slippages, which were a problem. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of luck involved in all that.
Yeah.
But I think he had a good idea there, right? Which is move in like mass transit kind of things.
Yeah.
Move on the bike, move on the bus. Don't, I think, you know, that is a very smart move.
Mm.
Whereas I think the inclination is get in a fast car that you could drive.
Yeah.
It's like, nah, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
You're trying to disappear and, you know, fade into the crowd.
Yeah.
Not be fast, like you're going to outrun someone.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So I had the flu. It's probably the most sick I've been in my adult life. It was sincerely fucked up. I went out Sunday night. The people want to hear this, actually. I went out Sunday night of last week, and I had a couple glasses of wine. And on the car ride home, I just got this walloping fucking headache. And I was like, what the hell did I drink? Was there something wrong? It was just white wine. And I came home. I took a bunch of medicine. I went to sleep. I figured I would sleep it off. But then I woke up the next morning and I was just in a world of pain. My head hurt, my body, everything. I didn't really eat much this week. I lost a bunch of weight. It was pretty fucked. And now I have this cough that won't stop. So get your flu shots, people. Don't do what I did and ignore it because you think, I'm fine. If I get the flu, I'll run through it. That's true.
I would.
You'll survive it, and you're probably
that shit to me.
You're gonna get it.
Watch me though, but watch what I do when I do get it.
I know. I fully respect what you're able to do when you're really sick. I did nothing. I took the whole week off work. I had a really important, a special journalism obligation that I was supposed to do in the middle of this week that I was really honored to be a part of and very excited about, and I couldn't make it. So I'm very bummed about that. But yeah. That's been my journey the past week. Sorry about the delay.
No problem. They've been just choking on content.
Yeah.
So much content.
Keeping the content flowing.
All right. So you want to do this pronatalism thing? Because we've got like an argument. We've got a debate.
Yeah.
Unfurling.
Yeah.
So that's pretty damn exciting.
Yeah.
Right. So do you want to introduce this? It's your piece.
Yeah. Okay. So hang on one sec.
Well, not. I'm going to get the smoke going. So we have two pieces here. The first one is titled, Why the Left Should Embrace Pronatalism.
It's pronatalism.
By Elizabeth Brunig. And then we have, We Should Be Neither Antinatalist Nor Pronatalist.
By the Riddler.
But he uses a hyphen.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I wonder if that's a British thing.
Actually, he only uses the hyphen in the title, and then elsewhere he doesn't hyphen.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
I just use it all in one word, because I'm not going to fuck around with hyphenating.
Yeah, though you did quote someone who hyphened it.
Yeah, so. You got to do it sometimes. But I respect the German method of just making giant compound words because hyphenating and shit is
we're moving against the hyphen. The hyphen internal to a word is on its way out.
Yeah, we've moved past the need for the hyphen.
I have this problem a lot with non-disparagement.
Yeah.
And non-compete and non-solicitation. All the restrictive covenants that I deal with in my work, always unclear. Am I we hyphening? We not hyphening?
How's the work been going? I hear there's big news coming next week.
I'm hearing Tuesday is going to be a bombshell.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I'm hearing.
All right. Well, we'll be battening down the hatches here at the Brunig Complex.
I'm ready to go. I've been firing off some spicy letters.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Really going at them.
Some spicy letters.
All right. Well, I basically feel like, you know, there's an ascendant form of pronatalism that's essentially reactionary, that is about sort of, you know, retrenching.
What is pronatalism?
Okay. I defined it as the belief that having children is good, A, and B, should be promoted by society.
Okay.
I take that to be pronatalism.
Solid A and B there.
Yeah. And it's
And it's a both. It's a conjunction.
Yeah.
What if you think it's good but should not be promoted by society?
I think that's...
Or you think it's bad but should be promoted by society.
Yeah, I think those are weak forms of pronatalism, you know?
Oh, no.
We're gonna have
strong and weak.
Yeah.
Instead of different words.
Yeah.
It's always a big question. You call this, say, thick and thin?
Yeah, you can do that
sometimes.
Yeah. You have your robust pronatalism.
Oh, my God.
How about that? You like that?
Yeah.
Is this just fucking your brain up?
It's one way to do it.
Yeah.
It's one way to do it. I'm a fan of the subscripts. Pronatalism 1,
pronatalism 2,
pronatalism 3. Yeah.
So we can speak of pronatalism in the Brunigian sense.
Now it's different. So I wonder if everyone's following the question of how do you start with a clear kind of idea and then people ask questions clarifying and then we just wind up with 45 different variations on it.
Yeah.
All with using the same word but meaning different things.
Yeah.
Clusterfuck.
So the Brunigian sense or the robust sense or the thick sense or the strong sense.
Yeah. At least we've got those all put together.
Yeah, we're getting somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hate if the strong sense was different than the thick sense.
That would be a mess. Mm. The right-wing form of pronatalism that's associated with Elon Musk and to some degree Mark Andreessen and other tech people, including this person with an absolutely fucking crazy name that I had never heard of, Palmer Lucky? Lucky Palmer? This person's name sounds to me like a porn name.
I've never heard of him. Does Mark Andreessen have kids?
He's spoken in interviews about pronatalism. I don't know if he has children or not. But
he has one kid.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking weak, brother.
Yeah, those rookie numbers. Got to get those
1.9 Billy? You've only got one kid?
0.9 Billy. Yeah, if we had $1.9 billion, we'd just have two kids, so...
Well, sure, but I'm not out here fucking pounding the table.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I kind of am. But two is fine. If everybody just had two, we'd be okay.
Well, some need to have more than two.
Yeah, but anyway.
For replacement.
Anyway, I wrote this piece saying that, yes, there's a reactionary form of pronatalism that has to do with like gender roles, trying to retrench gender roles. Women should stay in the home and have a bunch of kids and homeschool and yada yada, and that's the way. That's one version of it. There's the, I think, you know, most typical kind, which is like a little bit eugenic. I don't know. There was another profile of those fucking freaks, scammers with the woman in the bonnet who's like, we have four kids and we don't heat the house and they're all named Invictus Galt and that. Yeah, they get profiled every few months. The biggest grifters in the world. Just absolute freak bullshit.
Yeah, we covered them.
Yeah.
They seem a little fake.
They seem very fake. And also, having read this profile, they just seem fucking annoying. So fucking annoying. This woman is like making dinner at some point and she's like, if I had a Puritan name, it would be Tolerance because I don't mind cutting into meat. And I'm like, no one does. Is this special? People cut into their food all the time. Very strange woman. But they are the eugenics type of pronatalist in that they don't, and this is true of Elon Musk as well. None of these people have sex to produce children. They all do IVF.
Okay.
So all of this Collins couple's children have been born via IVF. And I think the same is true of Musk's 14 children. Is it there?
We have no idea, actually.
But Ashley St. Clair has talked about it.
All 14 of the kids. We've got good reason to believe this.
I would say it would not shock me if it were true, but it is somewhat true. In the sense that it is like verifiably true for some of the kids.
Sure. Okay.
And they do this so they can do embryo selection. In fact, didn't St. Clair say he used CRISPR? Yeah.
No, that's fucking fake.
She
tweet.
Goes,
fake tweet.
It's not real.
That's not real.
It was reported by Yahoo News.
I'm pretty sure it's a fake tweet.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
Maybe it's real. I don't know. It looks pretty damn fake.
It's probably not
on her profile.
It's probably fake. Who cares? The eugenics part of it is doing embryo selection, which, you know, allows you to select against certain diseases and crap. And that's one form of pronatalism, is that basically the rich should have very large numbers of genetically superior kids and blah, blah, that'll save us. That's obnoxious. I don't buy that. I don't buy the racialized version of pronatalism, which is like there aren't enough white people and our people will cease to exist unless we get those numbers up. Not worried about that. I don't take that seriously at all. So I wanted to write a piece where I was like, look, you can be a progressive pronatalist. You don't have to be a reactionary pronatalist. It happens to be that the reactionary form of pronatalism is ascendant right now. But you can think of a progressive form of pronatalism that's like, look, the ramifications of being part of an aging society are real. We should try to avoid it. If we can, it would be good to have more people. We can handle more people. And, you know, we don't want to see the country have the kind of problems that are happening in Japan and South Korea, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's not inconsistent at all with left politics. The Soviets used to give people medals for having a bunch of children. So it's not like it's...
And mining a bunch of coal.
Isn't that cool?
Well, that's cool.
It's kind of cool.
I'm an employee of the... Year award.
Yeah, we should give medals for shit like that again, just like yearly MVP in the United States. Anyway, I also think that socialism in a lot of ways is about the moral obligations that you owe other people. And having children is not just something parents do for themselves, and it's not just something they do for the sake of the children. But children contribute to and participate in society. They become adults. Children are for other people. And I think that alone is enough to, you know, lay out the groundwork for a kind of progressive pronatalism. So I wrote my little Atlantic piece about it, which was fun, and it got published, and I am no longer on social media, so I don't know if people got mad about it or not, but...
I didn't see anything.
A few days later, someone sent me a post by Nathan J. Robinson of Current Affairs fame,
mm-hmm.
where he extremely rejected my suggestion. Now, I was surprised by the vitriol in his piece because he's had both of us on the Current Affairs podcast before.
I didn't think it was that vitriolic. He's just doing debater stuff.
He's super mad at The Atlantic.
Well, at The Atlantic, but he's that's like, just the sort of like... hissing match of publications, you know, right? Like
Current Affairs is a blog.
That's very specifically not targeted at you.
Yeah, well, it's targeted at me in the sense that I work at The Atlantic.
Sure, but, you know, in his mind, I think.
And I say vitriolic for a couple reasons. I mean, there's a part where he's like, who can resist babies? They're so cute, except they piss and shit everywhere, etc.
Yeah, that was in response to the J.D. Vance thing, right? Because he starts it by saying, here are some arguments some of the pronatalists, they like conservatives, have made. And they're terrible, right?
Yeah.
Like, Vance is always trying to be kind of like edgy and like, it reminds me of old like net roots conservative or liberals or whatever. So he quotes him as saying, babies are good and we believe babies are good because we're not sociopaths.
Okay, yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, that's not an argument. That's just fucking stupid, you know? Yeah. Like, you're just like, my argument for A is that if you don't agree with me, you are bad.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, baby brain shit. And it's not funny.
It's not funny.
Like, sometimes that can be funny. Like, Felix, you know, he can throw out something that has essentially the same structure, but he's funny.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. This is not funny.
No, it's not funny.
And then he also says, he quotes Vance as saying, a society without enough babies is icky.
Okay.
Like, icky. Okay. Also, so that's where he's like, okay, well, you know, babies also can be icky
because
they, you know, vomit and shit everywhere.
So do adults.
Right, but it's like, it's just a point to be like, oh, is this what we're doing? So we're doing ickiness. So let's see, what is net ickiness? You know? Cause, I don't know. I view it as a good, lighthearted, like, this shit they're saying is not good.
Okay.
Not you, but it is focused on Vance.
No, I feel you. His argument is very simple. He's like, the left shouldn't be pronatalist or antinatalist. The left is there to make sure everyone can achieve their wants. And in that sense, saying that it's good to have children, you know, would confer this moral obligation onto people to have children. It would mean that having children is better morally than not having children. And therefore, you know, the dictates of freedom require that we say no to pronatalism because it confers an obligation on people.
Yeah, I would organize all this in a very clear way, of course.
Yeah.
Because peace kind of is a little all over the place, his.
Yeah.
But I think there's a way forward here that can focus the debate.
Okay.
So we've got argument number one, which is that children should receive welfare benefits and should be taken care of sort of in and of themselves. They're deserving of social support.
Yeah, we all agree on that, I think.
Everyone agrees on that. That's the family fun pack.
Yeah.
Practically, if you want to do it. Okay?
Yeah.
Number two, individuals, another reason why we want to provide family benefits or other kinds of social supports or whatever, right? Rules that you might have for workplaces, things like that.
Yeah.
Another thing that society should be interested in is making sure that people can achieve their desired fertility.
Yeah.
Everyone agrees with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it is a bad thing if people want three but can only have two because of financial constraints or because of the way the society is set up. If you could set it up some other way where they could achieve three.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So children should receive social support. One, everyone agrees. Two, people should, it should be a goal of society to make sure if people's achieved fertility is less than their desired fertility, that is a bad thing and society should aim to remedy that.
Yeah.
Everyone agrees on that.
Yeah.
The area where we're going to have a jumping off point is on should society, aside from helping people achieve their desired fertility, do members of the society and the society as a whole, if you want to think about it like that, have any basis for wanting to achieve a certain level of reproduction?
Yeah.
Like in aggregate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that we need to concern ourselves with?
Yeah.
And I would say you say yes.
Yeah.
And then he says no.
Yeah.
And that is where the games begin.
Right. He says, and this is, you know, I was reading his piece and I was like, yeah, I anticipated all of these objections. But I guess the part that I didn't anticipate was him saying, he's totally indifferent to whether the entire human race dies out. Because in my piece, I argue at the very end, like, look, really what this boils down to in terms of are you a pronatalist is do you think the human race should continue? Because if you do, then you're pronatalist with regards to someone somewhere, right? It may not be pronatalist with regards to your own nation or your own country or whatever, and that's fine. But you're still a pronatalist in the sense that, yeah, you think having children is good and people should do it. That's what it is to think the human race should continue. And Nathan bites this bullet, which I respect, and says, I don't care if humanity continues. I think it would be totally morally neutral if we all died out. And I thought, you know, if that's the left position, that to be a leftist, you have to be indifferent to whether humanity goes extinct, then that's pretty fucking sad if that's the best you can field, right? I mean,
well, yeah, he's biting the bullet there. But I think one area where you can kind of start to separate the sides here, mm-hmm. right? When we get into that category three,
mm-hmm.
is Nathan's conception of having children and the effect of having children is very individualized
yeah.
on the parent.
Yeah.
So that's how he really... That's his jumping off point for everything else that kind of follows.
Yeah.
Right? It's whether you want to have kids.
Yeah.
And if you do, great, then you can enjoy that. And if you don't, great, because you can enjoy that.
Yeah.
I think he says, for instance, you know, that there should be something a little shameful about a married couple choosing to just enjoy their lives together, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is sort of treats the child, it's kind of like a pet.
Yeah.
Right? This is the, and this is a great analogy for a lot of analysis around children.
Yeah.
Right? Do you think of children as pets?
Yeah.
In which case, do I care if someone has a pet?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. You don't like cats. You don't like dogs.
Yeah.
Then don't have one. If you do, then do have one.
Mm-hmm.
What's the fucking problem, right?
Yeah.
The issue is that, you know, that's, children's, the existence of children has an effect on everyone.
Yes.
And on the overall society. And this is true in a whole variety of ways. But even if we wanted to keep it very individual, let me give an example of this. Okay. Let's say I'm a married couple and I want to have kids.
Okay.
Okay. But I don't just want to have kids. I want my kids to have friends.
Yeah.
Is it, can I desire for my kids to have friends?
That's tough.
Or does that put an obligation? Is that something I should be neutral about?
Yeah.
Whether my kids have friends or not?
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you could bring Nathan here, he would, you know, he might struggle a little bit with the question to say, yes, whether your kids have friends is not something you should concern yourself with.
Yeah.
But I think most people would say, yeah, no, I mean, part of me wanting to have kids is that I want them to, like, you know, have a good childhood and life and whatever, which means that yeah. they should have friends, which means yeah. that I am of the view that, yes, I would like to see other people have kids.
Yeah.
So that my kids can have friends.
And not just I would like to see it, but it's good.
It's good. It would be really good if other people had kids
right.
so that my kid could have friends.
Right. You begin from, you know, a very simple place of friendship is a good thing to have.
And that's just a jumping off point,
yeah.
right? That's just to kind of let's get the juices going.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying, okay, well, we would, but like, because there was another piece in the New Yorker that came out about
Gideon Lewis Krause.
Correct. Very long, but a large part of it is him giving these little vignettes
yeah.
of life in South Korea, which I think is very interesting because a lot of people have written about fertility declining and pronatalism and all this kind of stuff. And it's often, you know, people talk about kind of the pure math of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, what's going to happen when the society has X many old people for
yeah.
so many working people, and you know, the actuarial balance is going to get so fucked, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought his piece was interesting because it's like, Actually, but also, you know, there's other things that are more subtle that aren't just sort of the mechanics of income transfer.
Yeah, I thought this was very interesting, his piece.
And so I'll read a bit from that. And this is the bit that made me think about the friend argument, mm-hmm. right? As he says, not far away, there's a school that once had more than 1,000 elementary age students. When I visited in November, it had 5. A pastel rainbow brightened the facade, and out front was a statue of a singlet-clad boy with a raised torch. The plinth's inscription read, "Physical strength is national strength." A pair of slippers had been left for me at the entryway, beside a trophy case crowded with bygone glories and a laminated poster that introduced the names and career aspirations of the 3 first graders and the 2 sixth graders. In a memorable scene and blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
He goes on and he gives a whole bunch of these little bits. And, you know, are you supposed to say that I don't care? That just doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
The people who could have had kids who didn't, they did what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And the fact that my kid goes to a school where there are no other kids, mm-hmm. there's 4 more of them.
Yeah.
That I don't care. There used to be 1,000. Oh my God, imagine all this robust activity, right? Pep rallies, big, you know, like I thought also about if you were to do this in the US and you had a similar kind of thing happening, it would be so great to go to like a rural Texas school where those communities are so built around like the football teams in the high school.
Yeah.
And it's like that's, they don't have enough kids now for the football team. So the stadiums are just, sitting unused. And like, we can't say, it would be good to have enough kids so that the football culture and the all of civic life, which is oriented around the high school here, can continue.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of depressing if that didn't happen.
Right.
Just examples of like, and I think this is where he is kind of not fully considering all the impacts.
Yeah.
And he's only thinking about, you have kids and then they're just your kids and like a pet.
Yeah.
My pet, you got your pet or you don't, and that's it. They're not pets. They go out into the world and they have to interact and they, a whole institutions in civic life orient around them. So if they don't exist, that stuff falls away.
Yeah.
And I think that's so, for Nathan, especially because Nathan is someone who's very into, like, have you ever read his arguments against, like, YIMBYism?
No.
So one of the things he really doesn't like about people who are just like, build a bunch of towers and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why he lives in New Orleans mm-hmm. is he really just likes that, like, he's genuinely one of the few people who's really like the community, the neighborhood character.
Yeah.
Like, it would be so bad if people came into this New Orleans and the way that it's this French kind of oddball thing. And all of a sudden we just had these like 40 story glass towers and it would just ruin all that. And, you know, so it's like, so you appreciate the idea. Why don't you just say, hey, if you like your French building, you live in your French building.
Yeah.
And if they want to live in a big tower, then let them live in a big tower.
Yeah.
Just like if you don't want kids, don't have kids. And if they want to have kids, have kids. Oh, because you recognize actually.
Yeah.
Right, that if all the big towers come in, now the way you liked, you know, the civic life and the feel and the vibes and all that kind of stuff that makes up your life, the reason why you live there, that would take a hit.
Yeah.
And so much so that you're willing to block housing, which causes all sorts of poverty and inequality and homelessness.
Yeah.
Because you care so much about that.
Yeah.
So whether there's an extra building in your neighborhood, that's something you should be able to concern yourself with. Whether there are kids for your kids to play with, not something to concern yourself with.
Right.
There's an inconsistency here.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, and maybe this also, you know, this is a very annoying thing to say, but like if you don't have kids, blah, 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 you may not realize the extent to which the existence of other kids matters a lot.
Yeah. And the existence of other adults in the future.
Other adults and institutions. Can my kid play sports?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that was the point I was making with the high school football. But even at lower levels.
Yeah.
This outpost that this guy's at, that Gideon is at, there used to be 1,000 kids there.
Yeah.
I assume they had soccer leagues and, you know, basketball leagues and whatever they play in South Korea. Jane's, there's no soccer league if there's only 5 kids in the fucking area.
Yeah.
So what do they do?
Yeah.
No sports. Kids can't play sports now.
Yeah, I think it's you know, and this is just adding on to what you're saying in the exact same vein. It's okay to be like, I want a dense society.
Density, yeah, you could value density.
I want there to be lots of people.
And so, yeah, I think he at least needs to grapple with that.
Yeah.
He can't just be like, it's kind of like pet. He doesn't use the word pets, but basically just like, it's like pets. If you want them, if they don't want them, then it's fine.
Yeah.
I think from there, when he takes that position, he then has to go down the route of being like, that's why I also must take the view that I don't care what the ultimate, you know, whether the population declines to zero or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's really clueless.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you ultimately have to take a pronatalist position, but you do need to address.
Yeah.
The externalities of children.
Yeah.
On other children. Yeah. And on other adults.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe your desire to have, you know, kids around for
yeah
things like that, which is just like your desire to not have big buildings around.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, we should put those on par at least.
He says, you know, one of the things he's offended by is the implication that if having kids is good, then not having them is bad. And it made me think of that in the symposium where Diotima says to Socrates, like, for fuck's sake, do you think everything that's not good and beautiful is bad and ugly? And it's like this elementary error he makes in his reasoning.
Yeah, I think with respect to that, and I've thought about this analogy for a while, and I think it's very good. I think it's a very good analogy. So we'll get into where he might set points later, but let me give a good example of this. Would you say that producing doctors or becoming a doctor, let's say, is good?
Yes.
Right? You would say that's good, right? Because imagine if there were no doctors.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty rough.
Yeah.
Right. Does that mean that if you don't become a doctor, that's bad?
Yeah.
Well, no, we don't think that either.
No.
And this is, I think, actually the state that you're dealing with the fertility issue.
Yeah.
I think this is a perfect analogy. Society needs a certain number of doctors.
Yeah.
You know, to meet all of its medical needs.
Yeah.
Right. And you can even articulate that as a particular ratio, right? Doctors per capita. And these figures are actually produced and tracked, and, you know, people focus a lot on them.
Yeah.
Society needs a certain number of doctors. And so we want to produce enough doctors. We also don't want to, like, put a gun to someone's head and make them be a doctor.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of in this sort of massaging situation where, okay, we want to make sure we hit our aggregate doctor levels. We don't want to make any particular person be a doctor, but we would like to get the right amount of doctors.
Yeah.
And we see this also regionally.
Yeah.
Because this is something that happens very explicitly, because we don't have, I guess, like an aggregate doctor shortage.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't seem like, but we do have doctor shortages in certain areas.
Yeah.
And so we could even take the word doctor and instead replace it with rural doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Is being a rural doctor good?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, people live out there. They need healthcare.
Yeah.
But we actually have a problem where people, doctors don't, we have a rural doctor shortage.
Yeah.
People who have doctorates, what, MDs.
Yeah.
They tend not to want to go out to rural areas, or less of them do than that we need.
Yeah.
And this is understood as a kind of policy problem.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, to again use his kind of language here, if I were to say, yeah, going and being a rural doctor and producing more rural doctors and, you know, creating incentives or other kind of structures that might get more doctors out into rural areas, that's all very good.
Yeah.
Would that then mean that if you're a doctor that doesn't go to rural area, then you're bad?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Right? But it's the same kind of issue.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the great problem.
Yeah.
With both of them. The doctor one is a little more trivial, but with the fertility one, it's a little more deep.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it's clear that it's reasonable for people to want to have a certain aggregate level of child production, if you will. We also don't want to be making people have kids.
Right.
So we want to achieve an aggregate in a way that is freedom respecting.
Yes.
in the same way we want to achieve an aggregate of doctors,
yeah,
or teachers or other professions like that. That is freedom respecting.
Yeah.
And it's a very delicate game to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Monetary incentives. We have those, for instance, for rural doctors.
Yeah.
Some, if you go be a rural doctor, we'll give you $50,000 or something, right? Yeah. Monetary incentives, maybe a little bit of, you know, nudging, you know, hey, yeah, being a rural doctor is really noble. Being a teacher is so important. You get to, you know, reach a child, touch a life.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff goes on, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, it's the same kind of thing.
It's the same thing, yeah.
It's basically the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There should be, being a parent should be a respected and appreciated, you're doing your part type thing, which it basically is.
At least I think there's a very good argument in favor of it that his piece is whiffs on.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't think about the aggregate. He doesn't think about, you know, we've gone over the whole thing.
Yeah.
He views it as a very personalized thing. And we should actually get to, you know, as much as I was like, I like this Gideon piece because he kind of blips over all the math involved.
Yeah.
But the doctor point is a good one in another way, which is that, you know, part of the problem of if you don't have enough kids is that in the future, you won't have enough doctors.
Yeah.
Because a lot of medical care is focused on older people.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, elderly people or even people who are not quite old, but, you know, in their 50s or whatever, right?
Yeah.
People who aren't retired. That's where it happens, right? Kids use the least amount of health care. And then as you get older, it's this more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so we're going to need more doctors.
Yeah.
If the population ages, if the share of the population shifts to the older ages, you literally will need more doctors, more long-term carers, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're not having kids, where are you going to get them from? You know?
Yeah.
And it will be a problem for economic production as well. If half of your society just gets up every day and has to take care of like elderly people.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, way less people that can go out and grow your food and build your cars and homes and all that.
Yeah. And I think there are people who envision immigration as being the answer here, which again means you're pronatalist for them. They need to be having children. You're just saying, you know, I'll skip over trying to place that kind of obligation on people in my own society. So I find that argument pretty unconvincing.
That's a kind of argument about, I would say, how it's not that practically important.
Yeah.
For certain countries.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair enough. It's sort of like, you know, in an ideal setting, no one ever has to have this discussion at all.
Yeah.
Right? Because either through net immigration or through just happenstance,
yeah,
everything works out.
Yeah.
Right? We don't need to, like, it just is the case that we're hitting 2.1, 2.2, 2.3 kids, you know, per woman or whatever.
Yeah.
We're doing it without having to talk about it, without having to plan about it, without, you know, it just happens.
Yeah.
And some people have more, some people have less. Everyone has the amount that they want to have, and it happens to be that that aggregates to replacement level or above.
Yeah.
With net immigration or something.
Yeah.
Right? And then, fuck, that's great. Now you're golden. The all the tensions arise when it goes below 2.1.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're like, okay, I really wish we'd never, I wanted to have to deal with this problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we want to be freedom respecting, but also do have, you know, reasons to prefer certain aggregate levels. And I think immigration comes in to be like, no, we're still in that blissful period.
Yeah.
We're in the bliss period where everything is actually fine and we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Theoretically, we may need to.
Yeah.
There's a theoretical world where, yeah, things do dip where net immigration and fertility is too low, and they, but we don't have to.
Yeah.
So we can just leave it alone.
Yeah.
But you're right that, you know, if that's true,
yeah,
and we can go that way, then it's only true because in fact, the aggregate levels are being achieved.
Right.
In one way or another, from other countries' fertility or ours or whatever.
Yes. And, you know, to drop a real hot signature style Catholic socialist take, freedom is not the highest good.
It's not free either.
It's neither free nor is it the highest good. There are other goods that are higher than freedom. Sometimes you got to do a little unfreedom to people. In this sense, that means conferring a moral obligation, which would mean they feel judged if they don't participate. That's the real penalty people are facing, is feeling judged. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that's kind of a reasonable price to pay for having the right aggregate levels of people in society. But that's a cultural thing. And that's, you know, culture's a big ship. It's hard to turn. So it's not like I have any concrete plans for how to achieve this. I just think, you know, I think that kind of obligation does exist.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. That gets us, I guess, to the next element of it, which is, okay, to rehash again, everyone agrees child benefits in and of themselves, whatever the level of fertility in this debate.
Yeah.
Two, everyone agrees that closing the gap between desired and achieved fertility is of value, because in a way that's freedom respecting, to let people do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And then three, we get into this debate about whether you can actually have a concern about the aggregate itself, or whether you just need to say, I just fully respect individual decisions and it really means nothing to me if other people have kids or not.
Yeah.
I think that Nathan's position on this is poorly developed.
Yeah.
I think you could develop it better. You know, I could write a better piece.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. And so I think there's a, you know, pretty compelling argument that socially we do have reason to want to achieve a certain level so that our kids have friends and can play sports and we have doctors and we have, you know, and the economy, and like it matters to other people what the aggregate level of kid having is.
Yeah.
It's not just a personal thing. But then from there, what do you want to do about it?
Yeah.
And one answer is just to go back to step one, which is, well, we'll just provide the child benefits.
Yeah.
And everyone already agrees with that.
Yeah. We're on board.
On a different basis.
Yeah.
Right? Not on a pronatal basis. It's on an overlapping basis.
Yeah.
Right? So that would be one move to be like, well, this conclusion, when we're on step three of this argument.
Yeah.
And you do go down path B, which is that it's not purely individual. It is something that is of social concern. When you go down path B and then you get to the end of it and you say, okay, so what is to be done?
Yeah.
You just end up saying, well, child benefits.
Yeah.
And so it just becomes a separate basis for the argument for child benefits.
Yes.
Which is not just my argument, which is children don't work and they need income and we right? It's not just the welfarist argument. It's also a pronatal argument.
Yeah.
Okay. And in that case, it's like, this is all well and good. I'm the arg man. I'm not going to get mad at the args.
Yeah.
But we kind of already settled this at step one.
Yeah.
And being on 3B sub I, you know, I think you can get to 3B sub I, but then 3B sub I just takes us back to step one.
Yeah.
So maybe all this is for nothing.
Yeah.
The question actually, I think, begins when we go, okay, not just 3B I, which is the same thing as one, the child benefits, but is there a 3B double I?
Yeah.
Do we get to double I, which is something beyond simply increasing the welfare state for children, which will cause people at the margin to have more kids because there are people who desire more kids than they have, but are simply financially constrained in a way that they wouldn't be if we implemented the child benefits.
Yeah.
Is there a 3B sub 2 where we're doing something beyond the child benefits?
Yeah.
And if so, what is that? And then how do we feel about that? So what is 3B sub 2? Is there a 3B sub 2? Where we're doing something other than giving people money or, you know, providing healthcare for kids and free childcare for kids and all that.
Yeah.
And what is it? I mean, do you have an answer?
Well, one thing I was thinking of when I was writing this is like, what if we did child benefits, but even more?
Yeah. I mean, that's...
How about that?
Okay. But that's still the same.
Yeah.
It's still...
I'm just saying that's what came to mind for
me. Sure. And the magnitude matters.
Yeah.
The magnitude matters for sure.
J.D. Vance said he supported a $5,000 per child tax credit. What do you think about that?
I have the mathematically rigorous child benefit level, which is the difference between the one person and two person poverty line.
Okay. What is
that right now?
Yeah.
Let me see. The reason for that is conceptually what it would mean is that adding a child will never increase your risk of poverty.
Yeah.
Because if you go from a one person family to a two person family because you have a kid,
yeah,
the difference between those two, the poverty line goes up.
Yeah.
For the poverty line for a two person family is higher than the poverty line for a one person family.
Yeah.
So if we compensate the difference between those two, that fully offsets the increase in the poverty line. And then for families with more than two, the increase in the poverty line, you know, is not as much even. So let's see what the poverty guidelines are right now. We've got two person family is 21,150. This is the HHS poverty guidelines, which is used for most benefit eligibility.
Yes, this is the only one I use. Yeah.
Formulas. I like other ones better personally, but this is the one they use for like SNAP and WIC and all that shit. Oh. The difference is $5,500, actually. That's quite a neat number right now, actually. Yeah. $5,500 difference. So I guess for the time being, I'm $500 more than Vance.
J.D. Vance. Yeah.
I think in the prior year, his might have been more.
Yeah.
Because they go up each year based on inflation stuff. So
he, I believe, walked it back or just quit talking about it altogether.
Oh, he walked back all this shit to be VP. Yep. He's kind of a craving guy. I mean, he also, you know, according to the Washington Post, was, after Trump's first presidency, bad-mouthing him in direct messages.
Yeah.
And saying that he sucked and all that.
Saying his first term was a failure. Yeah.
After having done this whole narrative about, oh, he learned so much after Trump became president and watching him in office and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that was his whole transformation story, which was a lie.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever, you know. But that's how you treat politicians in general, right? Like, other than Bernie, you're always going to struggle to figure to, you know, if you're going to focus a lot on who's a true believer, you're going to have a hard time because the job of politician is often incompatible with having thick, true beliefs.
Yeah.
But
what did you think about the Zelensky meeting?
I mean, look, I don't follow the Ukraine stuff, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, I know enough. Like, I read the news and whatever. From that perspective, from someone who's, I don't really follow it that well.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I'm sure I could read it, become one of the top dogs in Ukraine discourse.
That would be so funny.
Like I did with gas stove discourse.
Yeah.
You just rocked the environmental community.
You did. Yeah.
But as I viewed it, I think, you know, Trump's going for big macho man and all this kind of stuff. I didn't like it. It just looked like some bully shit optically, you know?
Yeah.
Zelensky's like 4'5".
Yeah.
He's not wearing a suit. He's just sitting there. His country's fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever, you know, he's not like an aggressor.
No.
As far as I know, he wasn't like looking to fight a war or something. And here he is. And this guy, and then Vance is being like, why didn't you say sorry?
So why didn't you say thank you?
What? Oh, yeah. Why didn't you say thank you?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very bitchy move, which is very in line with like the Trumpian version of masculinity, which is very feminine.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
catty.
It's very catty. Like Vance with his makeup on is being like, why don't you say thank you?
Yeah. Okay. Rude much?
I'm sorry. And then that dumbass was like, why don't you wear a suit? And it's like, oh,
shit.
Zelensky, who I guess is a comedian, that was always the thing. They're like, he's like the Jon Stewart of Ukraine. He actually had a pretty funny retort. I don't know if it's like good strategy in the long run for his country, but he was like, okay, you know, how about this? After the war, I'll I'll wear costume. Now, I think costume maybe is not an insult in Ukraine. So,
or it's not even always an insult in English. You can say like the costume of the evening was formal. It's
right. But wasn't the thing. But then he did subsequently have a quip where he was like, maybe I'll have one better than yours. Or at least cheaper.
Yeah.
Like that was funny. I thought that was a good line. Vance actually seemed to crack up a little bit at that.
I honestly, the suit thing is obnoxious on its own in its own right. But especially because you can see what Zelensky's doing. He has like solidarity with people in his country who are fighting.
Yes, that, and he says as much in the answer.
Yeah.
If you read just a little bit between the lines, it's like, well, after the war.
Yeah.
Like I feel in my country, it would be a little bit offensive to be wearing big fancy clothes during the war.
Yeah. But it also brought to mind that you know, Elon Musk.
Elon Musk dresses like shit. I guess he puts on a little suit jacket with the t-shirt under it sometimes.
He wears a little blazer with his tiny little gut peeking out under his little t-shirt.
That was the other thing. And I don't want to go into this too much, but the guy who asked the question.
Yeah. He was not looking good.
Brother. Why don't you look inward a little bit when we're thinking about how we can improve our appearances?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying do it. But like, if we're going to go that way.
Yeah.
If you're going to come at someone and talk about their appearances, I would just, you don't do that.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, you check your boxes first. Check your boxes first.
Yeah.
You know, as much as Zelensky, if I were in Zelensky's position, I would not have just been like, ha, 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 maybe I'll get one nicer than yours after the war. I might have been like, hey, buddy.
Listen, you fat fuck.
Hey, fat, as Biden said.
Listen, fat.
Yeah, listen, fat. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And again, I don't mean to say like that's some run. I don't. But like, when someone's coming at you in that way.
When you take it in that direction.
That's where the mind goes.
Yeah.
And I'm just navigating the world. I don't think about it at all. And I think it's like a cruel thing to focus on and stupid and whatever. I mean, sincerely.
Yeah,
I think
know,
that.
I know.
But yeah, no, for the audience. Oh, like, okay. I'm not like, but like, if you're going to do it, then
all bets are off.
All the rules, immediately I click into all those rules are gone. Let's go.
Yeah. If you open the door.
You open the door. We're going to go.
Yeah.
And in that case, I don't think you're going to succeed in a who looks better, Zelensky or you.
Yeah.
Not to say Zelensky is like the greatest looker, but he's at least in shape. You know?
Yeah. Look better than Trump and Vance. Dude, you know who looked like shit was Marco Rubio looking Marco like he was going to throw up.
Yeah. And no one, I mean, it would have been like, he also could have been like, what about your Secretary of State? His suit is two sizes too large. What the fuck's going on over there?
His zoot suit.
He's wearing his brother's suit. What's happening?
His was in the wash.
He looked like he was mortified. I mean, the whole thing is, I mean, Rubio's always been a big foreign policy guy, but in that sense, he's been, you know, a normal foreign policy guy, not, you know, the kind of person who wants to support Ukraine and Israel and NATO and, you know, all that shit.
Yeah.
You know, and this ain't it.
Yeah.
And yet he's Secretary of State while this is going on. And like, ostensibly, all of this is downstream.
Yeah.
And I know that there are more sophisticated arguments and there's different ways to get there that don't start from this position.
Yeah.
But the Trump and the Republican stuff is all downstream of like the Russiagate stuff.
Yeah, of course.
So like, because in 2016, there was a bit, or post 2016, the Dems went in real hard on Putin and Russia supported all this and Trump was in cahoots with a foreign power and whatever, which seems, I didn't follow all of it, but I read a good deal of it. It seems like not that significant.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like untrue in the sense that like Putin wasn't, but like it didn't seem like that important.
Yeah.
I don't think it swung the election. It's like an effort that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
But because of all that, you know, fast forward 8 years.
Yeah.
And Trump is real pro-Russia and therefore wants to see Ukraine just fucking annihilated.
Yeah.
And like, what a very unfortunate set of circumstances. I wonder if history will record this accurately.
Yeah.
If they will be able to pinpoint the issue here was that there was a domestic election issue in the United States about the degree of Russian interference in the election. And that ultimately drove the outcome of the Ukrainian-Russian war.
I mean, I think they will, because if you listen to Trump in that, whatever it was, that display, he's like, you shouldn't say bad things about Putin because he went through the Russiagate allegations. They were completely false. It was a hoax. There was no Russiagate. And he had to go through that.
Yeah, he did. He brought it up in the moment. Yeah, that's true. That'll be a transcript you have to contend with as a historian. Like, he laid it all out. What, you know?
And I just thought to myself, had to go through what? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, go through. Like, he was put on trial or something. He's a fucking head of state.
You imagine him sitting in Russia being like, why are they saying these things about me?
Not fair.
This is so mean. Come on.
So, yeah, pathetic. I guess that's the big news of the day.
Pathetic. Yeah, get your flu shots. We got to go.
Adios,
mofos.